This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and, of course, to maybe even find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe to the show so that other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Pearl and the Oysters. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, this band really marches to the beat of their own drum. I think in the interview you even mentioned that they kind of defy genres. So talk to me about your session with Pearl and the Oysters.
Thanks, Megan. And yes, it was delightful to finally have Pearl and the Oysters, Juliet Pearl Davis and JoJo Pollock and their band in Studio A for a session. Their music is without question an elixir for gray skies, tough times, and their 2024 album Planet Pearl is buoyant, breezy, and charming. But that's not to say that there's not a wistful or bittersweet quality to some of the lyrics, because there definitely is. Juliet and JoJo spoke of that juxtaposition in their songs, as on the restless, sleepless lyrics of Side Quest, which they performed in this FUV live session. Juliet and JoJo were joined by their bandmates, Pat Howard on drums, guitarist Adam Paulson, and bassist Jonathan Rivera. And in a recent Instagram post, Pearl and the Oysters noted that in 2024, they played 58 shows over three continents in nine different countries. And to trot out a really cringeworthy pun, I think in 2025, the world really is their oyster, and I can't wait to see what happens next for this band.
And what are we going to hear first in this session?
It's the song that leads off Pearl and the Oysters' Planet Pearl, and the song that also kicks off this FUV live session from Studio A. This is Side Quest. Day we wake up in a wrong planet again. Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Pearl and the Oysters with Side Quest from their charming, buoyant, but often lyrically melancholy fifth album, Planet Pearl. If ever there were a time that the planet needed a dose of Pearl and the Oysters sunshine pop, it is right now. Juliet Pearl Davis, also known as Juju, and Joaquin Pollock, or Jojo, immigrated from France some years ago, and since landing in the States, they have built upon their love of the American songbook, Brazilian bossa nova and samba, 80s lounge, and other byways to make their own sparkling brand of champagne pop, or in their own words, jazz pop joy and depressed disco. I am so happy to welcome Juliet and Jojo to Studio A. Hello, how are you? I mean, depressed disco. I think I love that that you came up with that.
I think I did. Yeah, it was for the press release. we needed some sort of a catchy descriptor.
Yeah,
and I guess it's because it's so counterintuitive to think of disco as something that can be a little dark.
Yeah,
but I think it lends itself to it quite well. Well, the tension between maybe dancey music and lyrics that make you think,
right,
is always something that I appreciate.
Well, SideQuest is a great example of all those disarming contradictions that are on Planet Pearl, because it's a sweet, pure pop rainbow of a song, but then the lyrics have anxiety, insomnia, sadness, uncertainty. You know, it's kind of how we get through the day a lot of times. We mask things. You know, we can be smiling on the outside to the world, but inside we're sort of roiling with all these emotions. You know, it's an interesting tightrope that you teeter on. And Juliet, do you share the lyric writing, or is it primarily one or the other of you?
I don't know. Sometimes we talk about like concepts together and just like ideas that emerge. And then, you know, the lyrical part, the actual like writing the lyrics can be, I mean, for me and for Jojo, it's a pretty like solitary process, actually.
Right.
But we have been talking a lot about like what we want to express in the songs, and some, you know, I don't know, surrealist ideas we have together, and or just ideas in general, what we want to express. And
now, yeah, there's supposedly, and I don't know, Jojo, if this was for the press release too, but there is a conceptual idea behind this album of like an interstellar space traveler, or is that something that you're just putting out there? And it's basically a very personal album about, you know, the confrontation of you coming from France originally and trying to make your way through a very confusing United States, especially over the last 9 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I mean, personally, I'll let Juliet answer for herself, but personally, it felt very personal, and maybe the overarching concept, maybe it was something that tied the album together.
Right.
Later, as we were starting to write songs and lyrics. But yes, it is an album about the feeling very alien in a way. So the metaphor felt just perfect. I mean, it's a metaphor that we've definitely tried to employ before, but I think that it's at its most realized in Planet Pearl, because the main subject is not homesickness, but this sense of saudade, as the Brazilians say in Portuguese, which is this longing for something that is both a place and a time, or a person and a time. And it's a little more complicated than homesickness or simply, you know, missing home, and because you miss a time.
I feel that all of our albums have been very anchored in a sense of like space, because we were discovering the US, because, you know, we're expats from France, and the state of Florida, where we first moved, was very inspiring for us. And then we had this whole, you know, inspiration about making kind of like landscape music. And anyway, it's, you know, these were our previous albums. And then we landed in LA. And Planet Pearl is, sure, it's, you know, extraterrestrial, but it's also our most intimate album. And we're, you know, our Planet Pearl is also being very much explored in this last record, something that we probably never did as much So it's the wider picture, but also the most intimate, you know, smaller right.
Interior world. Interior
you
world,
can hear yes. it because there's several lyrics throughout various songs on this album, which you're referring back to the creative process, the challenges of that. There's a beautiful song, I think it's Mid-City at the end, where it's just this sense of homesickness mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. very apparent. And you also find this place of reaching out to sounds, whether that is the squelchy synths or the sort of sense of samba or cinematic, like, you know, is it Francis Lay or Lai? How does he pronounce his last name? The composer?
Francis Lay.
Yeah. It just feels like there's soundtracks to certain films that mm-hmm. are filtering through that reflect on childhood or whatever mm-hmm. else, that you create that home base within the music that you're doing on Planet Pearl.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy that it comes through.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I was going to say.
It's a pretty... As we were saying earlier, like the tension between, you know, the nostalgia, the sadness, you know, the saudade, and then having, you know, those poppier songs that are more like straightforward. Or basically, I mean, our plan is really to make people feel good. That's, you know, but we're also going through paths of like sharing deep intimacy with the listeners. And yeah, definitely, I'm so glad this nostalgia comes through. You know, and thank you for listening to the lyrics and to, you know, paying attention to this, because it is. I feel that it's kind of what makes us right now. Like our identity is very tied with this tension.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're originally from Paris. Mm-hmm. You met as teenagers at conservatory?
In high school.
Do you remember what was your first impression of each other? Do you remember the moment that you met each other?
Well, it would have been first day of high school because yeah. we were in the
same
class.
It would have been. I have a very specific memory
of the first time.
You getting late in the class, just like in the movies.
Yeah.
You were late to class? Which class was
tardy.
It?
Well,
first class.
Was I late to the very first? I don't think so. Maybe the first week. Yeah.
I find it extraordinary that first meeting of meeting somebody who is very much a part of your future destiny when you meet them that young. I just think that's incredible. And then, so did this band come about because you, Jojo, you came to Gainesville, Florida to get your PhD?
That's right.
Did you end up completing the thesis and defending it and going through that whole process? So you have your PhD.
Yes.
And concurrently, Juliet, you were in Florida, but you were also spending time in New York.
Yes. I initiated this like will of going to the U.S. But my goal was really to live in New York. And I spent 8 months there and then joined Jojo in Florida. But yeah, we had this like very loose plan of going to America together, and I'd be in New York, he'd be in Florida. And then he happened to find this incredible community in Florida that was really inspiring. And I was like, okay, well, I'm very cold in New York and I'm also, I don't exactly know if I should stay. And I ended up going to Florida and the adventure really started for me.
So
I mean,
Pearl and the Oysters really began
yes,
there.
Yes, we had some songs, like a few songs before even coming to the US. But yeah, it happened throughout those first few years.
And the band really started in Florida. Yeah. The live band.
Least, we started touring.
Exactly.
What I love is walking around your setup today is that you have so many vintage instruments that you use, vintage synths, Rolands. I was looking at your Omnicord. When did that playfulness sort of like come together where you were figuring out, because you are genre defiant. You can't really pin Pearl and the Oysters down, except you're not, you know, heavy metal. That's the only genre in country you've not yet touched.
I think it was born from like some kind of frustration of feeling very closed in France, actually.
Really?
The you know, the taste of people and how, you know, people were very confused, put a lot of emphasis on categories and once we arrived here, there were no rules anymore and we had a lot of fun just exploring. What would you say, Jojo?
I agree. I think the seriousness in French indie pop at the time didn't agree with us, and we wanted to do a 180 and present ourselves as this really multicolor sort of bubblegum type of band that was faceless. At the beginning, we were really trying to not have our faces or likeness be part of the universe of the band, and so that's why also from the first album to the fifth, it's always been illustrations, on the cover. And so we wanted to create this sort of Technicolor cartoon dream.
But I remember like making an executive decision of like turning, cranking up all the noises.
All the bleeps and bloops, as they say, because it's something that when we were working with previous bands in France, it's something that was regarded as maybe a sort of overindulgent goofiness that didn't fit. And we were always shoehorning in songs, and people that we worked with were like, we shouldn't do that. That's too unserious, as the kids say. And that's precisely what we actually zeroed in on. And we were like, no, that's us. We will do that. So I think the band started on this sort of basis of wanting to be our own little universe. And of course, very fun and very upbeat and zany. But it became something else over the years. It became a little bit more melancholy, as you said. But we kept the sort of very synthy, spacey element, because I think it also works with what we're trying to say about this feeling of being alien, etc. I think it actually really, really works. It ties in with the concept lyrically and everything.
And it's kind of your superpower too, is that your perspective, the angle at which you look at this country, this music, is very uniquely yours. I'm Cara Manning here with Pearl and the Oysters, JoJo and Juliet. And before we launch into Cruise Control, very quickly, I wanted to introduce the balance of your band today. Your Oysters, who Pat Howard on drums.
That's right.
And then Adam Paulson on guitar. And Jonathan Rivera on bass. And you've been touring together as a group. How have you been working with these guys for a while?
Adam, yes. Yeah. The guitar player. Pat and John are new to the band. They've been playing with us essentially since the beginning of this tour, which we started about 3 weeks ago, opening for Ginger Root throughout the U.S., and they're amazing players, all of them, all three of them.
And on the album, Juliet, your father Jean-Michel is playing vibes on it. And JoJo, your cousin Ted, co-produced some of the tracks as
Theo,
so it's a family affair.
It is, That's also because the album is very tied to, I guess, what I was going through also personally with my mom being sick and everything. And I think that maybe doesn't show up literally in any of the lyrics, but it was very present in my psyche as we were making the album and writing and recording.
And she's okay now.
She's okay. She's doing much better.
That's great.
Yeah, working with my cousin Theo, it was very emotional. And of course with Juliet's dad, who has been a part of this project for a while now, but it's always amazing to be able to have, especially on that song Mid City, where he played vibraphone, have someone that is actually one of the thematic focus of the song be actually on the song.
I grew up in a really small apartment in Paris, but there was always space somehow for his vibraphone. And vibraphone is like the soundtrack of my childhood for sure. And including him in this song while speaking about homesickness was very meta and like super deep. And I remember describing this song to my mom once, and like crying in front of her, just trying to capture, to express how meaningful it was to me to write this song in LA about Mid-City, and also linking it with all the memories and the nostalgia and this idea of like never being able to go home because home doesn't exist anymore. Home, if we tie it, as you were saying earlier, JoJo, home is time and space,
Well, I was about to jump to Cruise Control, but instead I'm going to jump to Triangular Girl.
Oh, yeah,
because this actually feels like it's more tied to what you're talking about. FUV Live Sessions, I'm Cara Manning, and this is Pearl in the Oysters, live in Studio A with Triangular Girl.
Triangular Girl, suck on her. Infinite space, infinite time.
And from their new album, Planet Pearl, that is the live version of Pearl and the Oysters' Triangular Girl. I'm Kara Manning for FUV Live Sessions, and I am here with JoJo and Juliet of the band. And Triangular Girl, there's so much emotion going on in this album. You know, in addition to the fun stuff, like I think I'm desperate at some point to segue big time into Jackson Browne's Somebody's Baby. I just want to do that one day. There's just so many lovely references, like little nuggets and gems and Easter eggs throughout this album. You hear a certain like guitar sound or a bass line or synth, and you're like, oh, that reminds me of. And that's what's fun about it. But the emotions that course through this album are really deep. And Triangular Girl is a great example of that. And I'm wondering what that song sort of signifies for the two of you.
I think it was a song about feeling a little bit inadequate also, maybe as just, you know, again, we both have one American parent, but we didn't really grow up with two mother tongues. And sometimes, you know, people just having normal social interactions can be a little draining because we still feel like it's not our world and we're a little bit intruding on something that could happen and go on without us. And sometimes it feels that way. And I think this song is just about inadequacy or something in the sense of maybe feeling like you belong elsewhere, and it's confusing. And so the idea of like, you know, it's a very simple like kids' toys where you try to put the triangle in the circular hole and it doesn't work. And so I think that's what the song was about a little bit.
I would imagine, though, living in L.A. is hard. It's funny because I just recently spoke to, for FUV Live Sessions, Fran Healy of Travis, who wrote the whole last Travis album is about trying to figure out Los Angeles and failing. I would imagine it is challenging to kind of, you know, it's very American. It's very Hollywood.
Yeah.
And trying to find your place in that community. Have you been able to connect with musicians there and starting to make it a Pearl and the Oysters place of home for you?
Yeah, we got really lucky. We actually moved there right before COVID, but somehow we knew a few key friends that introduced us to the wonderful scene of a music scene of Highland Park where we live. And so it's been very organically, we've been meeting great people. And I mean, for me, we come from the city of Paris, and
right,
just the city planning of Latin cities makes just so more sense to me for like just human connection. LA does not know. There's like, there's no public space. There's no place to hang out. It's just
you're in a car
or yeah, you're buying yeah something. And I just, you know, I just miss staring at people in the subway.
Very New York.
You know, for Coast to Coast, though, you worked with people like Dent May, and you worked
exactly
with Leticia Sadie.
Mm-hmm.
Riley Gear, who's of a No Mortar Orchestra, and there's definitely a UMO and Pearl and the Oysters connection in what you do. So having that kind of collaborative group,
that's amazing. And that's why we're staying.
And that's why you are staying. So thought to going back to France.
Not yet. Not any serious thought. But we're entertaining the idea at some point. But what I want to add about LA is that precisely music is the one, I guess, part of our experience in LA that has been very, very good. I guess the one activity where we didn't feel this sense of alienation and otherness, and we felt very welcome and embraced by the scene and the people that we met there, and also very inspired, which is something that bigger cities with bigger music scenes and essentially cities with more than one or, you know, one music scene like can often have, and that's how we were drawn in, I feel. I'm always so humbled and inspired by just the average musicianship level in LA. It's super inspiring.
And yeah, there's something to say about the beauty of the landscape. And,
yeah, of course.
You know,
it's a beautiful town, but it's complicated.
The blue skies.
Yeah, it's both a nightmare and a paradise. So
Yeah. That's a good way of describing Los Angeles, a nightmare and a paradise. In an Instagram post, you went on about what your sort of secret ingredients are to making the perfect Pearl and the Oysters song. And you mentioned your studio essentials of a Suzuki Omnicord, which we saw today, a Korg Monitron, which is your secret sauce, and a Roland Space Echo. I would imagine that you know, watching you, Juliet, like whip at between a flute and samples and the omnicord and you know, a tambourine and singing, and you know, and JoJo, you are on everything. So you're on keys and whatever else. But are you completely tech geeks? Are instrument geeks, vintage instrument geeks? Do you sort of, or do you have a collection of things, or do you really sort of return to the same instruments over and over again? Because I'm wondering how you compose and upon what. What is that initial?
Well, it all started with a suitcase that we brought from France, you know, of like whatever we could fit in, you know. So we had all the, I mean, every littlest synth we had with us.
We were broke when we moved to the U.S. So we had little gadgets, like the Monotron is $40 or something.
Oh.
At the time, we brought the stuff that was starting to become a trademark signature sonic element of the demos that we were making that became the first album, but we just brought the essential, the cheapest, the smallest, etc.
The Omnicord we had.
And so it all started like that. But I would call us instrument nerds, yes, definitely. I wouldn't call myself a tech. I don't really understand the technical aspect of recording. I'm trying to get better at it.
There's magic in errors, though.
Yeah,
when you stumble your way through, you
absolutely
sort of create your own understanding of what the potential is of what you're playing.
I'm definitely obsessed with all kinds of anything electronic, electronic synthesizers, percussion synthesizers, electronic instruments in general fascinate me. And it dates back to high school and college, I guess.
Yeah.
We did this course in college that was a sort of introductory course to 20th and 21st century electronic musical instruments. And we had a very passionate professor who introduced us to a lot of old, weird musical gadgets that became instantly so just fascinating to us both. But also Juliet had grown up knowing of the theremin and things like that, which I didn't. I learned about that way later. But yeah, it's been a big part of what we do, is this sort of allusions to maybe space age and early sci-fi soundtracks, just tape manipulation and things like that.
Is there a film composer that like rules large in your life? Because I can hear film in throughout everything you do. You know, it's like I want you to go back in time so you can score a Stanley Donen film from 1967, you know, to do Two for the Road instead of Mancini. Because it really, I just love that sort of cinema, you know, cinema lashed.
Well, definitely. And I think that's we kind of rarely talk about our French influences, but I feel that French music soundtracks, you know, like François de Roubaix, is a very important thing for French musicians here, and their sense of, you know, having like a lead synth, like doing the melody. I think that was kind of like ingrained into our DNA, and of course we love cinema, and that's how we actually got closer in life, is that we went to the movies all the time. And
very Parisian. Yeah.
There is also, in an article I read, that you also cite a 2003 collection called the Get Easy Sunshine Pop Collection as being something that you obsessed over. Is that true?
Well,
with like Dave Grusin and Kenny, the Cowsills?
It wasn't exactly that compilation. I don't know.
I think we were talking about ultra lounge compilations.
Yeah. Right.
Basically, yeah, and anything lounge and exotica and sunshine pop, the weird 60s as I call them.
Yeah, we always loved like this mixture of you know, the jazz songs but with the exotica idioms that you can use, and the bleeps and bloops, and that's like a special thing that is rarely done, done at the time. And I'm so glad I'm so excited to be doing that
just
music.
Yeah,
you know?
Kitsch, I guess. 60s kitsch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also like the High Llamas.
And the High Llamas, of
Lemon
course.
Jelly and Stereo Lab and
yes,
bands like
course.
that were playing with those things.
Of course.
Cara Manning with FEV Live Sessions. I am so happy today that Juliet and JoJo and all of the Oysters are here from Pearl and the Oysters. And we're going to wrap up with Cruise Control. There's a really interesting lyric, and I don't know which of you it generated from, but as I bare my soul while people scroll, someone better console me. Who is that? That's you.
I guess that was me.
That was you.
Yeah.
And it sort of just says everything.
It's a common experience, though.
Yeah. But it just, I mean, this is such a personal album. Yeah. And you can really hear it in the lyrics. And that's such a vulnerable thing to write. And yet, Cruise Control is a very happy sounding song. So
yeah. Again, it's about creating these moments where initially you don't think much of what's being said because the music is so, I guess it takes you elsewhere than where the lyrics would take you. But on second or third hearing, being like, oh, wow, actually, that's a pretty strong image, or it's something that I like to try to convey and sort of not necessarily hide. I don't see it like that, but I know how I listen to music, and it's very much music first, lyrics later. But that's probably also because I'm not a native speaker, so I don't know if people can feel like already, you know, sort of drawn to the lyrics first. But for this song, that image to me was just felt very 21st century, you know. It's part of what we do is throwing a bottle in the ocean, you know, and sometimes it feels a little bit deflating because it can be very vulnerable, the creative act and then the releasing the art into the world and feeling like it's not reaching anybody or it's reaching people in a superficial way. And I think that I just wanted to talk about this era of just like, you know, competing for attention all the time and the sort of dissonance that it can create because it feels very personal or you know, we're getting very intimate and at the same time it's sort of just gliding over, sometimes amounts to a lot to people and sometimes it feels like it doesn't, but it's ultimately a personal view and it's just, you know, the more pessimistic, well, am I really reaching the people in the way that I want? And I'm sure that some days we are, and I see that some days we are, because obviously people come to the merch stand at the end of shows and they talk about us with us about the lyrics and stuff. And it feels like, oh, okay, some messages are coming across, but, you know, sometimes it feels like they don't. And so it's more about the experience of feeling like they don't.
Right. Yeah. Also the dissonance, I'd say, between like the big picture of like what's going on in the world.
Exactly.
And
yeah, and planet upside down. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
very much so.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, and the micro, like everyday life of
our little, you know, troubles.
Scrolling. Yeah. Our little troubles. And this is like, I think it must be the most alienating thing for everyone right now, is like dealing with both those emotions like all the time.
What to reveal, what not to reveal, who we reveal, you know, through social media.
Exactly.
It's just really complicated. I will say the Planet Pearl was one of the really glorious surprises of this year for me. Not that I didn't expect a Pearl and the Oysters album to be magnificent, but you really touched upon a certain zeitgeist with this album, and it's beautiful and it's creative and it's unusual and I just love it. And I'm really happy that you're both here today and that the whole band is here. Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, Juliet and Jojo of Pearl and the Oysters, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Live in Studio A, merci beaucoup. A bientôt.
A bientôt.
This is, and my terrible thank you for like dealing with my terrible French.
It was great.
This is Cruise Control on FUV Live Sessions.
Slow me. Oh, I've been
That was Pearl and the Oysters performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Juliet and JoJo for joining us in our studio and to Stone's Throw Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Aldo Noriello. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Simone Yanez and Catherine Sherman. Megan Aftermat is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer of this episode, Kara Manning.